You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a newest episode of Myopia Defender Childhood. This week, we're watching an animated classic. For those of you who texted me on Twitter about the hint, well done. But yeah, you should, if you're not, I guess, following us on Twitter. We're on it a lot, but at Myopia Podcast, join us, follow us, figure us out. Further, what else can I tell you? We have some new exciting stuff coming down the line. We're working on upcoming season stuff. Thank you for all of you who came out to see me at Cineprov. The next episode of Cineprov will, of course, be Masters of the Universe. Check out cineprov.com. I may be performing. I don't know. I'll let you know closer. Finally, Patreon stuff. ESO has a Patreon, ESO Network. We are on it. We're working on stuff for it now. I'll let you know when that comes out. I want to thank everyone for tuning in as we, crack out this nightmare fuel. Thanks.
Do you wake up in the middle of the night with cold sweats thinking about professional wrestling?
Have you ever done the Ric Flair strut thinking no one was watching but they were? Woo!
Have you ever binge-watched 18 hours of The Ultimate Warrior only to want more?
If the answer is yes, then do we have the cure for you?
The Pro Wrestling Roundtable. We talk about the past, present, and future of professional wrestling, brother.
We review wrestling movies and even jump in a time machine to review past wrestling events.
You can find us on iTunes and www.theprowrestlingroundtable.com.
Also on Twitter at podcastpwr.
Also join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/ESO Pro.
We bring the squared circle to the round table.
Welcome to Myopia Defender Childhood. This week we watch Don Bluth's, I guess, first movie, actually, The Secret of Nim, the prequel to Rockadoodle. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defender Childhood. Hey, man, he directed that piece of shit, too. He's not a hero. He's just a guy who got lucky occasionally. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defender Childhood and Riff Ron Cineprov this time. And on panel, we've got
Matthew W. Quinn, who has met Don Bluth and talked about The Secret of the Nim for a newspaper.
Are you going to get into that, or is that...
Might reference it here and there.
Yeah. Secret of the Nim?
Oh, whatever.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I, too, have been kidnapped by the National Institute of Mental Health.
That's the one. I knew it was something. We'll get into this. So, this is a tight 90 or 85-minute movie.
This is like 79 minutes, excluding the credits.
This is something.
Yeah.
So I don't remember who even suggested this. I'm going to guess it was my buddy Jamie, who loves Don Bluth. I get it. These movies have no hope, really. I mean, it lightens up at the end. Like,
it took itself way too seriously for most of it. I mean, I'm kind of glad that it wasn't another animated musical. I like it when animated films aren't musicals because, you know, it shows
that. What do you have against Rockadoodle? I mean, honestly.
Several things, but we'll get into that on that episode.
I think everyone does. I haven't even seen the movie.
Oh, Rockadoodle.
Oh, boy. It's Elvis as a cock, by which I mean rooster.
Well, I thought it was Glenn Campbell.
I don't know.
I think his name is actually something like that, but it doesn't matter. He's dressed like Elvis the whole movie.
Well, let's focus on when he started well before he declined.
All right, so Land Before Time 2 starts out as a musical. So Secret of the Nim is his first movie after he left Disney. Him and his brother go off and start this company with United Artists, I believe, distributing this movie based on a Robert O'Brien book, which is bleak, I think you could say, to say the least. So since I guess the person who suggested it is in here, Daniel, will you give us our plot synopsis?
It's pretty much if you take Ralph Bakshi's Wizards and Watership Down, put it in a blender and mixed it together, that's pretty much this movie. To get more specific, it's after winter and it's time for the Great Migration, which means all the animals run away from the farm they live near so the farm machinery doesn't kill them. One of the mice, Mrs. Brisby?
Brisby,
okay. Is worried because her youngest child has pneumonia. So she goes to the Great Owl, who's voiced by John Carradine, which was very weird,
yep.
Who suggests that she finds these rats who know how to use human technology to help her move her home. Specifically, this one rat named Nicodemus, who's Derek Jacobi, which is also very weird.
Yeah, there's some big heavyweight British actors in this for...
Yeah.
I guess reasons? I don't know.
Can we just call him Rat Saruman? Because that's the vibe I got.
Didn't he end up doing one of the Lord of the Rings movies?
I don't think Derek Jacobi did.
No, Don Bluth.
No, that was Ralph Bakshi did the animated
Bakshi.
One.
This looks like a Bakshi at times.
Anyway, so she goes there and realizes that the reason that all these rats know how to use human technology is because they were all experimental rats from the... National Institute of Mental Health, or NIM, hence the title. And there's this power struggle amongst this tribe of rats where this one wants to kill Nicodemus. And she gets caught up in that. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Okay, so this is a reluctant hero story,
yeah.
Right? She were initially introduced to her and the rats of NIM because... Her son, Timothy, is sick with a fever and such. Mm. And she goes to Mr. Ages, who is another mouse that seems to be intelligent.
Speaking of, speaking of weird voices, Mr. Ages was Toodles from Hook.
Mm-hmm.
And one of her other children was Will Wheaton.
And it was. And my wife kept asking me if Mr. Ages was the dad from Beauty and the Beast. It's not, but it sounds like him. All of these characters are just put upon old men.
Yeah, same personality, the smart, kind of dotty old guy.
Well, it's not even the personality. It just literally sounds like him.
And looks like him, but that's because Bluth was a Disney animator for how many years?
Forever.
Yeah.
For like 20 years. Him and Tim Burton, you know, yeah. Creepy aesthetic is just kind of all you get out of Disney.
Maybe it's as creepy, but in terms of animation quality, this is a beautiful film. Like when Bluth left Disney, it was because they were being cheap and not paying attention to detail. Like, for example, when Miss Brisby is going into the house, she goes through the hole, the light cuts off and light comes back on again because her body is blocking the light.
Mom.
And Disney in that period just wouldn't have bothered, but Bluth did. And the environments are just very well done. The animation's good.
I like the waterfall that they did.
Well, and I mean... The world that they build is actually pretty impressive. It's creepy. There are some things I really don't like about this movie. It gets way too quiet, way too quickly. There's a lot of sound, or there's a lot of scenes where there's zero background noise. I don't know.
It really does remind me of Watership Down because it builds this mythology for these farm creatures in the same way that movie did, which was impressive in its own way.
Well, and to your point, Matt, the movie that came out against this, I guess 6 months before this from Disney, was Fox and the Hound.
Ooh.
I'm not a fan of that. I mean, I think the animation is okay, but it's funny that that's the one that came out right before this just because it also has anthropomorphic animals that look kind of the same. Like, there's at one point, I mean, the cat is evil, like cats should be, but...
They play that cat up like the sharp tooth in Land Before Time. Yeah, the movements are even the same.
What the hell is with this? In every kid's movie, there's always this prejudice against cats. It's sickening.
Well, but cats do kill animals.
For fun.
Yes, and so do dogs. And rats kill animals, too.
Rats are nasty.
Well, the rats are kind of portrayed anyway. As evil as well.
Except for Justin. He's cool.
Yeah. The captain of the guard, Justin. Who came up with that name? I am the captain of the guard of this magnificent kingdom. My name is Justin.
Especially opposite Nicodemus.
This is before boy bands, so that wouldn't be a problem.
Oh, I mean, Justins are just—it's just a name. Like that, you're right. I do like Auntie Shrew being a bitch. That's kind of great. But I mean, you're right. Everyone else has really good, big pretentious names. Who's the creepy rat who's trying to take over?
Jenner, and he looks like a wolf. Like the way his mannerisms, his face is structured, he looks like a predatory animal, and he's so greasy.
Hmm.
Like the way he acts.
So it was a Scorsese character, basically.
Kind of.
But yeah, so yeah, Will Wheaton plays Martin, the precocious boy kid.
And which, Shannon Doherty is one of her other kids.
She can't spell either of her names right.
No, she can't.
And then Hermione is Auntie Shrew. I'm just looking. Oh, yeah, that's right. Mr. Arthur Mallet. That was the guy I was trying to think of. He is hilarious. He's Mr. Ages. Anyway, so we have the situations where they're trying to find out. She's trying to make sure her son is fine. So she goes to see Mr. Ages. It gets like a...
Mr. Ages tells her that she has to go see the great owl, but she's scared because owls eat mice.
Yeah, the great owl is the way he's portrayed. It's like a godlike being. You know, it's, they can easily strike down a predator on mice, well, the way it kills the spider.
Well, it's the Oracle of Delphi is what it is.
And it knows everything. It is, that part's well done.
In what way?
Well, I was saying the way owl is portrayed. So the owl is a predator that kills mice. And it is so vastly superior to any other potentially dangerous predator. Timmy is already sick from a spider bite when he gets pneumonia. See a big old spider about to attack Mrs. Brisby, then the owl just smushes it like it's nothing. And it dispenses all this knowledge. Like it is, as he called Oracle of Delphi, even like a godlike being, the thing that can either destroy you or bless you.
He would be 30% sexier if it were an Arthur Miller movie. Or Arthur Miller.
Nah.
Zack Snyder movie. I was just thinking of the Oracles from 300.
The dancing stoned chick.
Well, that's kind of how the Oracles really were.
I don't know. John
Even
Carradine.
With the dancing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just kind of thought they sat around.
No, they were over vents and they would hallucinate and they would be raped by older men. That's pretty accurate.
One wonders, this being Frank Miller.
Oh, I mean, they probably weren't terrorist hookers, but from his hit comic, Terrorist and Hooker, he's a monster. Though, have you read, I'm sure you've read Batman, Batman Returns, The Dark Knight Returns.
Oh, yeah.
Did you read the second one?
Yeah.
That whole one is like, Robin ain't no gay. Like, he just kills Robin because he thinks Robin is in love with him. It's the most homophobic thing I've ever read.
I'm pretty sure Frank Miller at one point said Batman would be a lot healthier if he just came out of the closet.
Because then he'd have an excuse to kill him off. It's his final solution. I mean, final book.
Whoa, this got dark really quickly.
Fortunately, the owl is not dancing around stoned. That would be weird.
It was kind of stoned.
He kind of is. He's wandering around crushing things half blind with glazed over eyes.
Well, that's because John Carradine at that point was 120 years old and needed Percocet to get through the day.
And Viagra to get through the night.
Oh, yeah.
But so from here, we kind of,
David, could you come change me?
Gross.
Gross.
He's a little busy in the closet, if you get my drift. You know how David Carradine died, right?
Yes.
I was just going to let you hang, talking about a man's self-suicide.
As opposed to his non-self-suicide.
I mean, driving on 400 if you die, it's kind of suicide, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, vehicular suicide.
I'm just looking at when John Carradine find. Oh, 1988.
So 3 years after this? No, 6 years after this. Anyway. So the broth starts theoretically making her son better, but we never see him again, Timothy, until the very end.
Yeah.
But they hear the tractor starting early this year, plowing the field.
Because the frost cleared early. Oh, we can't forget the thing in this movie that doesn't fit at all, and that's Jeremy.
I wanted to ignore Jeremy so long.
The annoying crow.
Yes. Yeah, Dom DeLuise shows up in this movie because
it's a Don Bluth movie, so of course he does.
And they almost have the same name. Don and Dom.
Well, I like some of the dialogue that Jeremy causes to happen because, like, Miss Brisby is very good at playing on his little tics to get him to do things for her.
Oh, and to get him to go away because he's an annoying shit.
Yeah, he's an annoying little shit. Okay, Matt, you clearly love this movie. You never talk this positive about anything or let us not go off on a tirade or stop us from making fun of something unless you really like this. So I want you to explain to me why Jeremy adds anything to this story.
Well, I'm just saying he's annoying. That's probably the point. I think I'm just saying that there is a, he does allow for some good dialogue, the way that she kind of plays on his various issues to make him go away. I thought that was kind of clever.
I don't think you get credit necessarily if you shit your pants and then say, no, it's okay. I meant to do that.
Well, I mean, and to me, I think he's an unnecessary character because he does nothing to advance the plot. If anything, he ruins things. The movie would not have happened without him being an idiot.
It's the exact same character, anyways, the Seagull that Zero Morstel played in Watership Down. So it's, you know, that whole derivative thing anyway. So I just don't get why he needed to be there.
Maybe, it's totally
maybe
fine.
He's in the book. I haven't read the book,
the book either.
I mean, who could be bothered? But also, it doesn't matter. It's what's in the movie that counts, right? We get into this argument a lot, but all that matters is on the screen. And the thing is, all he does is slow down the plot. All he does is slow down the movie. And in fact, what's worse about him is...
He establishes Dragon as a threat that they have to then drug him because he delays Miss Brisby back enough for the dragon to show up.
Jonathan dies drugging Miss Brisby. Drugging the cat, drugging the dragon, right?
Yeah, but we never see that.
Well, right, but why would we need to?
Because we have him slowing her down, coming back from getting the drug from Mrs. Age. It's the point Dragon can attack them.
Okay, but my point is, if all he does is slow down the movie, slow down the plot, he's unnecessary. To me, this is a vestige of it being a kid's movie and them not wanting to make a more mature movie.
I will say it paid off because he's obsessed with getting laid throughout the entire movie, and then Edie McClurg shows up as the other crow, and Edie McClurg is just a treasure.
No, it is. It's literally... Rodney Dangerfield. Like, it might as well be just, hey, we're all getting laid.
Because Matt's giving me a confused look. Edie McClurg, if you've ever seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, was the car rental agent, and she was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off as the principal secretary.
The one who says he's a righteous dude, that one?
I don't think so.
In Ferris Bueller's Day Off, she's talking to the principal about how all the people in the school love Ferris Bueller because he's a righteous dude.
Man, you just completely threw me off. Her character name is Miss Wright, by the way.
I need to go rewatch Ferris Bueller's Day Off, apparently.
It's a good movie. I have.
It's a great movie.
It is a good movie. I mean, it's possibly his only good movie.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
His. Matthew Broderick.
Oh, Matthew Broderick's. Okay.
What other movie has he done that's been any good?
Glory.
Okay. He won an Academy Award for that. And The Freshman. That one's good. He was terrible in Godzilla.
Boo.
He was terrible in, what was it? I almost said Let the Right One In, but that's not right.
Inspector Gadget?
Stay tuned for that piece of shit. Oh, man.
So anyway,
Matthew
Broderick was in John Hughes movies, and so was Edie McClurg, and she was also in this one.
So Six Degrees of Separation.
There you go.
And he's also, I think, in future movie War Games. We've got to do War Games.
What was up? Here was the thing that confused me. What was up with the stone? What was that?
The best possible explanation I can have is that was some sort of thing that Nicodemus made as part of his technology magic shtick. But that wasn't in the book at all.
How does it work?
How do you know it wasn't in the book? I thought you hadn't read it.
Because some people were complaining that this movie was anti-science by saying that the rat's science doesn't help, but this magic does. So I'm thinking maybe it could be some sort of Clark law, sufficiently advanced science is magic, but that's just reaching.
That makes no sense, though, because I get that they would build up what we would call the scientific process as a mythology because they're animals, so that makes sense. But this stone was this magical thing, which made no sense within the rest of the context of the movie.
Yeah, that threw me off because I thought at first it was going to be some relic that her late husband made.
Yeah.
And that he was going to, Nicodemus gave to Mrs. Brisby, who never really gets a name, by the way, which bothered me.
Mrs. Jonathan Brisby, that's the name.
That's it.
But there's a theory that she may not have had a name. And then
referring to theory.
That would explode. Jonathan Brisby is an intelligent mouse like Mr. Age is like Nicodemus. So maybe he came up with a name for her. Maybe she never had a name before because she's an ordinary animal.
So we're getting married and now you're Mr. and Mrs. Matthew Quinn. So you don't have a name. Also, we can get into this eventually. But how does he give her intelligence? Through his dick. I mean,
I'm not into non-sapient life forms, Nick, so we'll have to.
But I mean, again, he gives the kids names.
Yeah, the kid.
He gives his Aunt Shrew name.
She didn't really have a name.
Aunt Shrew. Auntie Shrew. That's a name. Not Mrs. Matthew Quinn.
I don't know. I'm guessing the fact that she doesn't have a name is to like get her emphasize the whole reluctant hero thing. It's like, I don't want to be anything. I just want to be, a widow that just focuses on my own life, which kind of makes sense, but it's still pretty sexist.
There's a lot of like weirdness that I don't know if the book fixes, but like, again, we don't know how any of these other things are intelligent because she's intelligent. She even says that Jonathan taught her to read.
Oh yeah. Well, not well, but yeah, you're right.
That would explain why the kids are better than she is, because they're partly super mouse and she's fully normal.
But how are they any smarter or less smart than she is? We don't ever see that difference. We don't see any, and they don't seem any more or less competent than Auntie Shrew wandering.
Well, there's
either.
That one kid that assumes that in order to lose their breath, they only have to be like partway submerged in mud.
Which they call, what's this black stuff?
Oh, yeah.
And they don't know what mud is. We're good. And then Jeremy shows up and fucks everything up again.
With string. All kinds of string. Red, orange, blue. He's been saving it.
We don't need punchlines. We don't need comic relief in this movie. This movie is bleak. I get it. It's very bleak.
Well, I saw that when I was 6 years old, and I remember quite frankly being terrified.
So it didn't work. So the comic relief didn't help. Right?
I just remember him being weirdly fixated on sparklies.
Oh, yeah, because that he wants to steal the amulets to impress women or whatever.
Yeah, he's like a kind of a mockingbird or whatever. What's the one that steals stuff?
Shoot, I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't know.
Magpie?
Yeah, that sounds right. So, yeah, he's a magpie. Or he's supposed to be a crow, but he's just generic bird, whatever we need. Generic, the kids call him a turkey.
Now, Matt said Super Mouse earlier, so I'm just thinking, was Mr. Jonathan Brisby, in fact, Mighty Mouse?
That would have been a better story.
There you go.
If he flew.
Ah.
If it was like the first Matrix movie where like right at the end she could fly, better movie.
There you go.
Now the Matrix and Mighty Mouse, now I'm imagining the last fight with Dragon where he's doing the bullet dodge stuff.
But
then he's just a little too slow just once and the cat gets him.
So speaking of, Dragon's this big fat kind of... He reminds me of the cat from The Great Mouse Detective.
Oh, yeah.
And the one that's like the mafia equivalent of like burying someone with the fishes, you know, swimming with the fishes or like whatever. It's just a big, fat, lumpy, kind of shapeless cat with a chimera.
Felicia, right?
Yeah.
Is that the cat's
name?
That
was the cat with Vincent Price. We did that movie, whatever, 1,000 years ago. But
Vincent Price saved that movie. He saved a lot of things.
He broke into song. The movie's like a C.
It's fine.
Frankly, today, I don't know if it'd be an episode because it's just kind of meh. But like Vincent Price breaking into song still might push it towards being an episode.
I think we got a decent episode out of it. We talked about like the Disney Dark Ages ending and the Renaissance beginning and CGI and stuff.
And Vincent Price singing.
Vincent Price singing. I remember very little of that episode.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done 600 of them by now. But yeah, so at this point, what?
If you want to have comic relief in this movie, that's what you need. You need something like a old school horror actor, which they did when they cast John Carradine, but they turned him into the Oracle of Delphi.
Or something like that. No. Yeah. I thought you were saying something, Matt.
Not at the moment.
But yeah, okay, so from here we go to this like rat parliament thing of the wizened mice or wizened rats specifically. And they decide that Nicodemus wants to move them somewhere else so that they don't have to worry about
Thorn
the monthly
Valley, right?
Right. So they don't have to move to like deal with the weekly or the yearly plowing essentially.
Yeah. They don't want to depend on humans anymore. They want to be totally self-sufficient.
Right.
And the fact that as long as they're near humans, there's risk Nim might find them.
And on the other hand, Jenner likes staying because he's transitioning at the moment. No one. Okay. That's a thinker.
Every time I heard...
I can call him Bruce if that helps.
Oh, I get it now.
Yeah, good. And they didn't like that they were stealing electricity from the humans more specifically. And we don't really understand their plan on how they're going to make more electricity. But effectively, I think they want to get rid of electricity and something. Yeah. You also get this weird, like, kind of Black Panther scene where they're like, with the human technology, now we can defeat them. I'm like, no.
Yeah, Jenner's getting a little full of himself there.
Yeah. There's that sword fight, which was also kind of weird for this movie.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, we can get there. At the end of the movie, there's like a 6.5 minute long sword fight between Justin and Jenner. And Justin, who we've kind of been introduced to, and then Jenner, who's just kind of a dick who looks like Scar's going to look like in 10 years.
Oh, and then who's the rat that throws that dagger into
Sullivan. He's Jenner's little minion.
Ah,
yeah, he was kind of 100% indifferent to everything. Literally, he's just an indifferent, forgettable character.
Speaking of weapons, though, what was up with that rat with the electric pike that was trying to stab Mrs. Brisby when she first entered the Rosebush?
Never explained.
He seems to be kind of overzealous because later he's helping move the house and they specifically say, Brutus, do this. So maybe he's the big, strong one who they do things.
I'm just wondering where he got that pike.
And why they were never used again. Because they seem much more effective than just a regular sword.
Use that against the cat.
Maybe it's plugged in.
I don't recall seeing a plug.
Your Uber weapon has an extension cord on it.
It's like it's on like one of those Samsung chargers. It just has to wait.
Oh boy!
It just has to wait and just has to wait and just has to wait and then it's like I can stab you once.
The image that comes to mind is funny.
Speaking of Black Panther, they have those electric pike or the electric spears, right?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen Black Panther yet.
It's pretty good. You should go see it.
I've been told that. I'm just kind of bored with Marvel movies.
This one's actually set up like a Bond movie. It's kind of neat. I mean, I'm just going to throw it out there. It's cool, but it is set up like a Bond movie. And if Bond was actually just acknowledged to be a superhero, it'd make more sense than some of the Daniel Craig movies.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest.
No, Pierce Brosnan needed to be a superhero.
Oh, to keep his hair that nice.
Yeah.
I mean, just, girl. Anyway, I guess we can kind of talk about the end of this movie and just kind of wrap it up. The thing is, I think we all agreed we thought this would be an episode because, like Matt said, it freaked him out as a child.
Yeah, there's not much that does.
I don't remember seeing this as a kid. I remember, like, in the 90s, either Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon Saturday afternoons would, like, play an old animated movie. Like, that's how I saw Wallace and Gromit for the first time.
Well, and they couldn't get the rights to Disney, so they would do a bunch of them. Like, Land Before Time I saw that way as well, and you know,
and I remember them doing this at one point, and that's how I the only thing I remember is they put together this little trailer, and that monologue about what the stone was included in it, which still makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't get it. There's a lot of weirdness too, because it's not just that it's an amulet, it gives her magical powers. Like, it's not just that it's...
Oh, and it burns her hands because they're bandaging her hands at the final scene.
It does,
it scars
her. And it literally does give her strength in a way that doesn't make sense, because it uses like this telekinesis thing to lift the cinder block that is their home out of the gutter.
Yeah, I mean... That should have been some, like, Deus... I mean, it's fine if you have a Deus Ex Machina, but it just makes no sense in terms of the movie.
Yeah, that's the problem with it. I mean, you can hand wave... I was saying earlier, hey, you could hand wave it as being some Rats of Nim science is magic thing. Like Nicodemus, he's got the glowing eyes and can do the scrying where he can see things. But that's really stretching it.
Well, because it's not a scientific thing. It's not like a machine.
Yeah, I would have almost liked it to be more like the seagull from Little Mermaid, where they have a bunch of human things, but they don't know what they do. And so they kind of, you know, MacGyver them around to make it more magical. Like, if they figured out a walkie-talkie and that's the way he was doing the kind of sight, like the seeing.
Or like an Isle of Dogs, if anybody's seen that yet. The one dog that watches TV, and that's how she... gets her visions, and she's literally called the Oracle.
So Nicodemus is stealing Cable.
Better movie.
Yeah, but there you go.
And then voice him with Larry the Cable Guy, and you have...
Dadgum! I done just pooped my overalls. Dadgum!
Courage of the heart!
Courage of the heart?
That's one of Nicodemus' lines in the Larry the Cable Guy voice.
You just completely threw my car over a cliff. I'm like, courage of the heart.
Oh, Lord.
Mrs. Jonathan Brisby, welcome to the Rosebush.
Okay, that actually was pretty good.
So I think we should go ahead and wrap this one up. Mr. Quinn, why don't you start us off? What do you think?
Well,
in previewing your review.
Okay, so... The movie, I'll admit, the movie had a couple flaws. The movie's really not very subtle. Like, Jenner is... obviously bad news. I mean, the dude looks like a wolf, and his body language, his mannerisms, he's obviously very predatory and sleazy. But again, this is a children's movie, so subtlety doesn't always work. And I saw this three times. Once I was a little kid, I remember it being scary as hell. Second time around my 20s, wanted to watch again to see how well it held up. That was like 2011, 2012, back when there was such thing as a blockbuster. And the third time around, it wasn't as good as the first couple times. Okay, second time around, I really liked it. Third time around, it's obviously not as good, but it never is.
I don't know, man. Sorry, Daniel, you go ahead. Thank you, Matt. Or did you want to give us your star rating?
My star rating is actually 9 out of 10.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right.
There's not very many that get this. It's just well done.
Not as good as Secret Life of Dogs, though. Or Secret Life of Pets.
I gave that a 10.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. This is not as good as Secret Life of Pets.
That's why scale ratings bother me, because eventually you get into that debate.
Well, but at least then we can compare him. All we know is that you liked the dog movie and probably Zoo. What other animal movies did you like?
Wait, Zoo?
Isn't that the one where the guy tries to have sex with a horse and dies? It's a documentary.
I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
It's funny.
Do we want to have seen it?
It's funny. At the end, the vets show up, and there's a guy running down the street with like a bag full of animal porn.
Not sure which would be worse, that Bob Flanagan documentary that Kirby Dick did or that one.
It's something to see. It's something that exists.
How about Super Masochist?
Yeah, that one.
Anyway, Daniel, what's your thoughts?
I appreciate Don Bluth. I like what he did, and I like that he looked at what Disney was doing and saying, no, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that whole aspect of him. And considering this was his first one, I get the fact that he was trying to get as much away from them as possible. And for an animated movie, yeah, it works. But in retrospect, I think he went a little too far. It takes itself a little too seriously. I don't know. I would have liked something more like Wizards or even Watership Down, something that just dove straight into more adult material rather than trying to balance between really dark fantasy and Jeremy the Crow. So I don't know. I mean, it's perfectly fine to watch today. It's perfectly fine to say that you like it. I get why you would, but I personally didn't.
Yeah, this is... Similarly, it's like in a Shrek scenario where you like don't know who it's actually for.
Yeah.
I will give Matt this. It is beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
And it's hand-drawn in a way that Disney didn't feel like at this time. I mean, we're talking, again, Fox and the Hound is not a great movie, but it's fairly well done. But it's also around Black Cauldron. It's also around Oliver and Company. Mediocre movies, to say the least. I don't know. I'm not the hugest Don Bluth fan, but to me, he's liking Don Bluth is like liking Wes Anderson or liking, God, I don't even know, P.T. Anderson or someone else named Anderson, Paul W.S. Anderson. Like, he has a very clear aesthetic, but it's not a mainstream movie. I don't know who this movie would be for. Like, I wouldn't like show it to kids. You know, for adults our age, it's nostalgic, but it's not really for adults either.
Well, I'm glad that he was breaking into that, though, and at least trying to make an animated movie in America that wasn't necessarily for kids.
Well, I can defend this as a kids movie. C.K. Chesterton said, children know dragons exist. What kids need to know is they can be beaten. Nim, Jenner, all those various
evil things. You said it terrified you as a child.
Yeah, so?
I don't... Okay.
That's legitimate. I mean, I'm...
So did Land Before Time. The tar monster scene, that one scared me, too.
Also Don Bluth. Again, I'm just saying, though, like, it's a weird in-between place. Like, if I'm babysitting a bunch of kids, I don't want to have to keep them up with nightmares. Well,
I was also, like, 6, maybe for 8.
All right.
I mean, but again, I'm not arguing with you. I just... When he was making this, I just didn't know, like... Okay, so he was frustrated with Disney. What would have happened then in Fox and the Hound or whatever movie sent him over the edge that he wanted to happen that didn't happen?
The interview I did is that they wouldn't give the characters shadows. They were just bean counting and being cheap, and the detail was suffering.
So he just didn't like the art.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of it. A lot of it was that they were just not trying anymore.
No, that does sound cool. Like, how did you get that interview with him?
The Atlanta Jewish Film Festival was in Johns Creek, and him and Goldman were there to do a panel on The American Tale. An American Tale.
Which is one we've already done. And yeah, I guess we can hint at this, but we will also eventually be doing the next one. And what is it?
Fievel Goes West.
Is it a colonic? Is it American Tale colon Fievel Goes West?
I believe it is.
Yeah. So with that in mind, I mean, I think all of us generally liked the movie. We gave it generally positive reviews, just to one degree or another, we recommended it. But with that, I'll give you your hint for next week. The next one is, I guess, a sci-fi classic starring James Spader. But with that,
you're using the word classic rather loosely there.
I'll tell you that you've not seen the base material, but you've definitely seen the spinoffs. So with that, stay tuned and tune in next week and every future week as we put another piece of your past on trial, etc. Oh, and pay for ESO's Patreon. We'll get some of that. ESO, patreon.com/ESO network. See ya.
Myopia Defender Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.